What up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of The Business of DJing. It's your host, Jamie Selects. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we have a very special episode where I do my first interview attempt with my business partner, my brother, my friend, Selecta MC. Super stoked to have him on. Couldn't think of a better person to interview for my first interview episode. There's a ton of gems in here, so I hope you really enjoy it. Just a couple notes. This is our first, like I said, first interview attempt, so I'm trying to figure out how that works. The audio is a little bit off. Because I was using a different mic, which was a little bit worse than he was. So just bear with me on that. But really excited for this episode. Hope you all enjoy it. If you have any feedback, definitely hit me up. And hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Dun, dun, dun.
Recording here. There.
Recording everywhere.
Recording everywhere. So I have this ISO on UMC. Let me get a big clap from you. Money in the bank. What up? We are live. Cool. Well, what up, my brother? Select
hey.
MC, how you
doing? Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
My name is Jay Selects. I'm still figuring out how to do this, obviously. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody, and thank you for coming on the show, MC. As I've been thinking about doing these interviews and about the business of DJing, I really couldn't think of a better person to want to bring on for this first one, especially this first interview that I'm trying to do. So thank you for letting me figure out how to do this on the fly.
Heck yeah, man.
So just a quick intro for the audience here. Just want to kind of preface who you are and, you know, what I love about you. And, you know, you I would say are the most hardworking, no frills, get shit done kind of person that I know. And, you know, there's lots of kind of definitions of the word hustle, but I think you embody the most raw form of that. And so I really just want to appreciate that about you from the jump here. And so I wanted to actually start off by just kind of asking you, where do you think those traits came from? Like, where did you learn that? Is it innate? Did you learn it from your parents? Like what do you think?
Gotcha. Yeah, I think for me, it's like a combination of things. I think there's for sure like an innate aspect of it, just because I think that I do things that I wasn't even taught in terms of like hustle-wise. But big shout out to my folks, though, too. Like, my mom always had like another hustle outside of her regular job. My dad always had another hustle like outside of his regular job too. And like even when I was a kid, I remember starting like my first business with my brother when I was like 6 or 7. Like we had a garden and we'd go sell vegetables like in the neighborhood. So I think a good amount of it is like, I think nurture and nature. I enjoy working though. So I think that it's never going to hurt you if you're trying to hustle.
Nice. So let's bring it up to DJing. I know this is how all DJ podcasts start, but I think it's important. So how did you first come across it? I know a little bit about how you got your first set of gear, but why don't you talk to us a little bit about how it all started?
Yeah, for sure. I think the base of it all was just like a general love of music. My mom had like a really good music collection, and so did my dad. So I remember I was like the CD picker. Like if we go on like a road trip, they'd be like, okay, like what are we gonna listen to? Because the CD changer was still in the trunk, right. And so you had to pick like, I don't know,
back in the day.
Exactly, right? You know what I mean? So you had to pick like 6 or 7 of them things to make sure the road trip was balanced. And so I remember like having like the book of CDs and be like, all right, we're gonna get this Prince one, we're gonna get this this old school funk one, we're gonna get this, you know, smooth jazz one, and like really be able to curate a playlist. So I always thought that was a lot of fun, and I think, I don't even remember, I don't think I really became like a DJ nerd until I started DJing. So it wasn't like before it wasn't like I was like, oh, I saw a video of this DJ and I always thought that that'd be super dope. Like, not at all. It was like, I really enjoyed music, but I ended up getting into it because I used to do these events at my house in high school, and I had like my boy's uncle used to DJ for me, and this one time like he wasn't available and I was like, man, I'm gonna learn how to do this shit. So, and so I remember just like doing some research, figured out how to get like some basic gear. And I told my mom, I was like, hey, can I get like $300 so I can get this stuff? I think I can make money with it. And then from there, it was just like DJing house parties in high school for like free. And then like $80 a night, which was like $1 million to me. And then having people around me that were like, all right, reinvest, as opposed to just like going to blow money on shoes and stuff. So
nice.
Yeah.
We definitely touched on a couple of things I want to get into. But yeah, can you walk us through a little bit more in detail how you went from, okay, I got my first gear, I'm spinning in the bedroom, then maybe I'm spinning in front of people, then, oh, okay, I'm actually making money on this. Like, what's the evolution, and how did that go for you?
Yeah. I mean, the evolution was interesting. So, yeah, definitely, like, first gear. I feel like the first, like, year or so was just figuring out, like, the technical pieces of, what isn't. Like, everyone knows the word mixer, but, like, do you actually know what it does? So, I think since I wasn't, like, a gigging musician or anything back then, it was really easy to just spend time, like, toggling and figuring that kind of stuff out. And I would say that I don't think I really got good at mixing until probably maybe 3 years in, because I wasn't gigging like super often. So if you're just playing for yourself, you only care so much about like how good the mix is. But I think that I, like, outside of like learning like the technical stuff, was like, okay, now let me pick good songs. Like, and so I'd make like mix CDs, to be like, all right, what y'all think about this one? What y'all think about this one? And so I think as my confidence got built up and I took input from people, it's like what we think would be hot if I rocked a party. That's where I think I kind of started to take those next steps and grow and figure out, okay, like, how do I actually like become like a good DJ? Because I think, so first equipment, then music, and then figuring out how to like put the whole thing together, and then like, all right, let's elevate. So
do you remember the first gig that you got paid for?
Yeah. First gig I got paid for is 2007. In Stockton on West Lane. It was a Sweet 16 party and it was neon themed. And I remember I had like my outfit ready, had my headphones, like it was dope. And I think I enjoyed that one the most. Number one was getting paid was awesome. And then it was my first time actually DJing like on a stage. So I was like elevated and could see the rest of the party from where I was. So I was like, I felt like I was Tiesto spinning for these 16 year olds.
So 2007, this was probably high school for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, high school.
Okay. And then, so I graduated high school in 2009, and that's where actually we first met, was my sophomore year, and your freshman year at the, the orientation event?
Mm-hmm.
I think we, like, came to the bathroom, and you were like, we, like, randomly met in the bathroom, and you were hella stoked.
Yeah.
Everything that we're doing, I was like, oh, I like this guy.
Yeah, because y'all had, like, we used to wear our badges to the thing. I was like, what is this? And I was like, you working? I was like, oh, man. Yeah, I remember that experience, too. Yep.
Cool. So, okay, let's jump into college, because that's where our company, Plural Music, I think, really came off. So,
yep.
Just to give some context here, Marcellus and our business partner, Joe, founded a company together called Plural Music. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the origin of that and kind of the beginnings, the early days of the college time for us.
Yeah. I think it was very, I think serendipitous is like the word I like to use when I think about that. Because I DJed, and I actually went to high school with Joe, and I knew he DJed, but like we didn't hang out or anything. Like I had my friends, he had his group of friends, whatever. And so I remember chatting with him the summer before freshman year of college, and I don't know if I knew he went to Pacific, and I remember like the first week of school I was like, oh shoot, what's this dude doing here? And so we chopped it up and it was like, oh, you DJ, I DJ. And so I think we did a house party first remember Nudek and Lou and all those guys, and I remember we had got it going and like the police came and rolled it like ASAP like within an hour. And so we packed up the gear. Me and Joe were sitting in the car, we're like, man, I DJ, you DJ, I got some gear, you got some gear, like, let's figure out how to, like, take over, right? And so, we would link up, like, once a week or something like that, and either jam or just kind of, like, talk through gig ideas and stuff. But I think that where it really got, where the idea and concept got solidified, we took Music Management 11, we were all in that same business school and concentration, and me and Joe were sitting in that first week of class, and the professor's explaining about the music business and like all the different options and stuff, and we're just sitting there like taking hella notes. And shout out Hatcheck, man, that dude's awesome. And I remember afterwards we would just be like ideating, and I remember that was it. And so from there I think it was like, okay, we know how to DJ, we've combined our equipment, now let's figure out like what kind of rates we can do. And then we were super fortunate like early on to be like, okay, how much, if we do a gig, how much of this do we need to put towards new equipment? Like we were always forward thinking as opposed to like fast money. And I think that was probably one of the, I'm not sure if anyone explicitly taught us that, but I was just really grateful that we learned that early on.
Yeah. So reinvestment, let's talk about that. So I think a lot of people, especially as you're a young DJ, you're like, oh man, I got this like extra stream of income, I'm going to go buy some shoes or something, which is nothing wrong with that, but talk to us a little bit about how the reinvestment strategy that we had at the beginning, even before I got there,
yep,
how that paid dividends for us later, and like what did that look like in reality?
Yeah, so reinvestment is super interesting. I think it's something that anyone should consider, even if it's not like a business, like anything that you're like working towards, like always like reinvest. And reason being is like you want to make sure that your future self is happy with what you did today. And so I think that we started out with like a super aggressive, we started out like pretty conservative reinvestment strategy. So probably 2011 to 2012 or so, we'd be like, okay, we'll do like, 30% of like gig revenue and just put it in the account. That way if something comes up, whereas I think that it got to like 2012 and I think we were like really starting to take the business serious. Like, okay, we got this locked down. We like established a residency in a town where there's no nightlife. We do consistently like all the primary social events at the school. And now we're even starting to do stuff with the university itself. So at that point I was like, all right, I think we need to have like these pieces of equipment, made like a list. I was like, but I think to get there in a timely fashion, we need to do like 100% reinvestment strategy. So we spent like 6 months basically DJing for free.
Right.
You know what I mean? Taking like bare minimums, but, like us being able to, us, doing that saving and having kind of like that, having that bankroll like ready to go. Once we started to interface with like, I'd say larger scale music equipment distributors, we were able to get gear in large enough quantities to where it like justified the lower rate than what would have been market. So it was huge, man.
Look, let's talk about gear for a sec. So remember back in the day, first of all, everything we had was just the most heavy piece of equipment you could possibly have. But
yeah, no wheels.
To give the young DJs out there, what's a good like starting point? Let's say, what's like the essential gear? And then let's say, like, what's the tier two? What should you get after you kind of got some, the regular speakers and whatnot?
Yeah, for sure. So I think before like diving all the way into that, I think it depends on what kind of DJ you want to be. There's people that just want to perform in like a club capacity or festival capacity, and then there's people that want to have like a mobile or AV business, right? And so two kind of different paths. I think that for the performance person, I think it would be really wise to invest in some in like industry grade equipment, so you have an understanding of when you get booked how to actually operate the stuff. It doesn't look really very good when you're like headlining a show and you can't work the system that you're supposed to spin on. It's probably one of my biggest DJ pet peeves.
Right.
So that's what would kind of be the route for that. But I'd say like most people actually want to go out, do parties and events and stuff like that. So for sure, now that technology is where it's at, I would get like a controller, to be honest. It's efficient to carry around. I'd say relatively easy to learn on. And it still has like the core functions that like grandpa's like me like, from turntables and mixers and records. But I think, it's 2022 from an efficiency perspective alone. Being able to take, one flight case to a gig versus three is already like much better on your back. So I would start there. So I would say, yeah, controller, laptop, speakers. And then once you get past that, I think that lighting is like a really huge thing. As we've built out our mobile DJ business and eventually production business, I've found that people are more willing to pay for like better lighting than they will better sound. Like I've gone to a wedding, taken out two basic 15 inch powered speakers, but brought out like 30 lighting fixtures, and I think the lighting fixture aspect of the invoice is more than the DJing and the sound. So
right.
For some reason people like the way things look, so if that's the route you want to go, I highly recommend it.
Only the audiophiles and like the musician nerds are coming up to you like, can I make a suggestion on the sound here?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down, if you have a industry grade equipment, don't need to be L acoustics or nothing crazy like that, but you have an industry grade equipment and people can hear it and you have done like a good head count assessment, you should be fine. I don't think that you need to be in a situation where you're rolling in giant flight cases and rigging to be able to support most events. So,
right, for sure.
Yep.
Nice. Well, let's keep moving to, we're doing it in college. I remember I used to book you all the time from all the fraternity parties. You basically owned the Pacific campus from where we were. But then I think Alana and I graduated like 2013, and that's when the first Get Down was thrown. So can you tell us a little bit about what that was and like what that vision was from the beginning?
Yeah. So that's interesting. That's like It's almost 9 years ago, which is crazy. Freaking crazy. It felt like it was yesterday. But I think I remember that particular summer super vividly, because I think that that event series and kind of like the fire that got me thinking about events on a larger scale was, it was really a move out of desperation, right? So I'm born and raised in Stockton, California. Love that place. Went to university there too, but it's always, I think that at that point in time, it was lacking like a consistent outlet for creatives to, like, you know, go dance, perform music, make music, like all that kind of stuff. And I remember one of the places we played at, it was, I think we had, I'd say, like a consistent level of tension with like the leadership there as to kind of like what kind of tunes to play and everything. And I remember me and Joe, we had gotten out of a gig, it's like 2 a.m. like usual, and we're just like driving around, we're driving around talking events and stuff, and one of our boys, Sim, was with us, and he was like, yeah, I work at this office, and there's like this garage, you guys should do an event there. We're like, what? So he's like, yeah, let's go. So we're driving downtown Stockton, it's like 2:30, almost 3 at this point. We check out this garage, and we're like, oh yeah, let's do it. And so from there, I think is when we really started game planning as to like how to actualize that vision of being able to create an event that both serves you know, like customers that want to like come and enjoy an event, but also serves like DJs and performers in a creative way. So, yeah.
Nice. So in terms of events, can you give a rundown of like what are the most important factors or considerations you need to think about when planning an event? So let's say young DJ out there wants to put on an event. You're telling them, okay, this is the things you need to think about right away.
Yep.
Here's what you need to put in the spreadsheet.
Yeah, definitely. I think like safety and compliance is like number one. There's been like a lot more discussion around it now because of unfortunate events that happened, you know, late last year. But I think even outside of that, something as simple as making sure you have a permit for sound, so that your event doesn't get shut down. Making sure the restrooms are placed in the right aspect of the event if you're like creating it from the ground up. So I think, yeah, safety and compliance, logistics. Are some of the ones that come up to the top of my mind, but I think you also want to think about what is the, like, how do you want people to feel when they get to your event, while they're at your event, and when they leave it? And I think a lot of that is drawn from like what is the, for the specifically around music, like what is the sound that you're trying to promote or build an event around? Because I think even for myself, I'm like definitely identify as an open format DJ. Like I'll spin any and all things, but I still have like a way that I want people to feel like when they leave the event, you know, like they're like, oh, I had a really good time. I heard some stuff that I did know. I heard some stuff that I did know, and it was blended in a way that I hadn't heard it before. That was awesome. Where do I find those songs? Right. Like that's kind of like the energy that I'm going for. And I think too, is just I think the next piece of that is understanding like what are the partners, that you need to bring your event to life. I think, earlier on, I think I was like a lot more stubborn, like I'm gonna learn how to do everything, which was helpful in the sense of like having like high level knowledge of different like different pieces of event. Like I know something about sound, I know something about lighting, I know something about structures, like all the different kind of pieces. But as you continue to develop an event, you want to think about where is your time gonna be best spent at. Like am I good at sound, you know what I mean? Like am I good at lights? Am I passionate about those items? And if those aren't areas of like, I'd say deep knowledge or passion, you move on and pass those to other partners that can help support that better while you can focus on maybe it's right. the design, or maybe it's your booking that you want to focus on.
Yeah, there's a balance to be had of like learning how to do everything, and then especially at the beginning, but then once you get older, you're kind of like, all right, I'm not very good at this, so I'm going to do the things that I'm really good at, and yep. I'm going to bring on the right team to figure that out. So speaking of team, I think that's when Alon and I kind of like came on, is after the first year doing the Get Downs. I remember seeing you guys do the first one. I was like, damn, I'm trying to be in there.
Right, right.
So I just like came down, wanted to help. And like, man, that was such a cool time. We were all super young, had no responsibilities in life. Just graduated college, basically.
Yep.
Just figuring it out, putting on parties. And that was such a cool time. So in terms of the business of Plural Music at that time, it was essentially doing some mobile gigs still, and then trying to make money at these events.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was like the entire scope of it. Like we were learning event production, so it's not like we were really getting hit up to do like a bunch of it, because we only knew it so well ourselves. So yeah, it was, I'd say back then it was still mostly like birthday parties and just like super small wedding receptions. So it wasn't even like we were doing, you know, like the full-on productions and sending teams out. I think we probably only had enough gear for maybe 2 gigs at a time. So, you know what I mean? It was limited.
Nice. So, continuing on the story of Portal Music, after we did the Get Downs for a few years, I think 2015 is when we knew, I think Joe and I at that point had moved to the Bay Area. And we were trying to figure out, okay, what's our move here? What's our move, not out of the valley, but, you know, up and out and trying to move on to a bigger
market stage. Yeah,
exactly. So talk to us about how we landed up in Oakland and the first Plural Music HQ.
That was a trip. So yeah, it was 2014 is when I graduated. So 2015 I think was just like this, it was like this soul searching window, because I think we're all done with school now, and I think everyone was working like a 9-to-5. And no one had one that was particularly cool. Like there was nothing like really awesome. Like Joe was working at the radio station, but he was like running coffees to people. I had like my first job. I was doing this management training program. So I was working with a bunch of truck drivers, learning ops and stuff. And you, I think, were doing, you were at the Fit Mob, right?
Fit Mob was the first.
Oh, sales first.
Sales first. Talk to us about Yelp.
I don't want to talk about it, bro. I don't want to talk about it.
Just for the record here, I got Marcellus a job. He stayed there for 2 weeks.
Three.
I was
there for 3 weeks, bro.
No, bro.
I have to look at my thing. But anyways, so yeah, it's a year like soul searching. And I was still based in Stockton. And it was just like there was more things that we wanted to do than were available geographically. And so I remember I'd be at work and I'd go on Craigslist and I'd be looking at like warehouse for rent, Oakland, like loft for rent, Oakland, like just trying to find spaces. And I remember I found this one and I was like, man, this is awesome. And so I texted Joe and my older brother who also lived in Oakland. I was like, hey, can y'all go check this out for us? And it was like, I remember it was like so expensive. It was, we had this, so I was like, all right, we're going to get it. It was this loft, it was like a warehouse with a loft at the top of it. It was like 2,500 square foot warehouse, like, you know, 30 foot ceilings. And I think it was so expensive. It was at $2,300 a month.
Was that his or a 33?
It was started at 23, but then it was hella cheap. And then it ended up going up with like, they took our internet off for free and stuff. So we ended up paying like $3,000 a month. But what it turned into, so it was this, we had an idea, so I was like, all right, I'm gonna build a room down here, and then there's a room upstairs, so there's three of us. It was me, Michael, and Joe. And then as we're building the place, like the different people from Plural kept coming by, like they said, hey man, this place is cool, can I stay?
Cool?
Like, can I stay? And so we kept building shit. So we, like, I mean, we violated the hell out of this lease. Like we built one bedroom, and then we built like our recording studio thing. I'm talking like hammer, nails, paint, every drywall, the whole thing. So we completely violated this lease. But we're there. And so what ends up happening is I think I had maybe like $5,000 saved up. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do the first month and the deposit or whatever. And we're going to figure it out. And we got this big ass place, you know, maybe 4 speakers, a few lights, some trussing, and like no furniture at all. So, and we was like, we get in there, we get the keys, and I'm looking at Joe. I was like, I think we need some more money, man. So he's like, all right, man, I'm gonna hit up Nev. You know, that, you know, his family runs Bank of Stockton. He's gonna he's gonna take care of it. So he gets us a meeting with the VP of the bank, and she's like, okay, what are you boys trying to do? And we're like, okay, well, we do this and this. She's like, okay, I'm gonna make you a list. And you need to come back to the bank with all of this information. Make sure none of the paper pages are wrinkled. Put it in a binder. Put a cover sheet and write a letter. I was like, okay, cool. And so you got me and Joe in this warehouse. Basically, we had 2 lawn chairs, 1 lamp, and the bank application. And me and him were just filling this thing out, basically in the dark. Like, all right, well, here we go. And so it was like that's how we like ended up there. But we were like, if we're gonna grow this, we need to be like in fertile soil, and we also need to have a space that's gonna foster creativity, because even, you know, no matter where it is, like, I think any artist can speak to it being like, it is hard to find a spot to just like do your thing consistently. So we built that. Like, there was speakers set up at all times, turntables active at all times, for better or for worse. Sometimes you get woken up at 2 a.m. from people spinning. But yeah, that's how we ended up there. So yeah,
I was like 2015. That was before I even DJed. I was like, everyone's like, oh, I play this music DJ company. They're like, oh, you DJ? And I was like, oh, no. Like, the longest time.
Right.
To figure it out. And I think that was such a cool time because, you know, we were all young enough to be able to put up with that. And that was also, I think, where kind of the foundation of the future of Plural Music, like what we're, the vision of, the long-term vision is where we started to formulate. You know, when we got there, it was basically, you know, we're doing, trying to put on these events, we do mobile gigs or whatever, and then, you know, our boy Alon was going to Berklee College of Music, studying, you know, music, basically music business out there. I came, and he came, and kind of this new vision formulated where we're like, we could really, literally be like the virgin of music. Like, we're trying to do, we could come out with a label, we can do talent management, we're trying to build our recording studio. That's where kind of all those, like, pieces came together in the vision.
Yeah.
So I think we had a little successful, semi-successful studio run there for a second.
Yep.
You know, we learned some lessons there.
Big time.
But it was cool to have that space, and I think we all missed that a little bit. But
yeah,
it was one of those lessons for us where, you know, we had something, and then sometimes in business you try things, and then it doesn't necessarily work out the way you think, so you have to kind of like reevaluate.
Yep.
So that definitely happened. But man, yeah, we had some events there as well. I think that was one of the coolest times that we ever had as a business, because we're all like living together, and the amount of shenanigans that took place is just wild.
Yeah. I think when I think about you know, HQ number one is I guess like being detached from it now for like, I guess, you know, going on four years, moved out in 2018, yeah. Going on 4 years. Wow. Now. It makes me think about, like, for people who go to work, like, how it feels to, like, be gone from the office, right? Like, you still can do the video calls, and you still do, like, you know, words with friends or whatever, but there's something to be said about, like, you know, getting a beer, and someone's, like, talking, or, like, everyone, you know, wakes up hungover on Saturday, and we're talking about, and really, like, doing a deep dive, debrief on the event. Something to be said for like helping people pack up gear, like, all right, man, good luck, have a good wedding, you know, like a real level of connectedness, which I'm glad we had that time, because I feel like those bonds we built are super strong, you know what I mean, from the forced time together all the time. But I think that without having that lived in experience, I think the business and the dynamic today would look very different. So super grateful.
Man,
I'm just
imagining if COVID happened with the time that we were there.
Oh man, we wouldn't have made it, bro.
Oh man. Okay, so we're kind of building the foundation here. We had the mobile business, then we're putting out the starting the label with our first track, The Chancel.
Yep.
That was super cool. Building out talent management. We didn't really know what we're doing, but I think we're just kind of trying to figure out, trying to make it all work.
Yeah.
And then I think the core of our business and what's been the most successful is definitely the mobile DJ and the production.
Yep.
And you had the most heavy hand in making that happen. So can you explain to us kind of the evolution of our ability to do mobile gigs from like when we first moved into that place in Oakland all the way up to, you know, when we moved out?
Yeah. I think it was super interesting. I think for sure, number one, there was no automation like whatsoever. So literally, I'd say the first, you know, I mean, from when the business started, probably through 2016, all 2017, any client we had literally like would call us. You know what I mean? Like there was no like messaging, there was like no mobile intake, and we didn't have like any money, so we couldn't really afford a CRM to be able to like support that kind of stuff. So I think about that. I think about literally taking power amplifiers out with speak on cables and like, you know, heavy speakers versus just having like powered speakers with XLR, stuff like that. But I think what really drove the evolution of it was a couple things. I think when we moved to the Bay Area, we were able to get much better quality revenue. And so that like was able to help us continue like that reinvestment strategy. But I think too was, like even before moving out, like we had, like a good amount of exposure to like what a successful DJ business looked like. So even before, you know, while I was in college, like I used to work with Frank Gallardo from Exclusive DJ. And that dude, he took me all over the place. Like, he took me to weddings, he took me to proms, took me to corporate events, and he like showed me like the business of DJing, which is like very different than just like spinning records. Yeah. Oh shit. My bad. No, I was not. Nah, bro, that was not. That worked out. Anyways, yeah. So he taught me that, and I remember him always explaining like, hey, you know, you can make a really good life for yourself by building like a good book of business and being reliable for your clients. And he was like, it's not always about being like, you know, a battle DJ or having like the best scratches, or even, he was like, even sometimes having like the latest music. He was like, but you can show up on time, you can articulate, you know, articulate directly with your, you know, with your clients, and like build a quality product, people are going to continue calling you. So I think I always kind of kept that with us and tried to like impart that amongst the team, like through examples. So it's like, all right, like, if the event starts at this time, what time should we probably be there just to be safe? You know what I mean? So, right.
Yeah, I think I'm too early to weddings, but I just get such anxiety that I'm like, I can't.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I think I've yet to pull up to a wedding before, you know, with less than 2 hours before it starts. Right. Even that, I'm probably like, let me get 2.5. I just, you know what I mean? You don't want to mess one of those up, so.
So there's a couple of things I want to go to next, but I think one thing that came to mind was building a team. And like, okay, so if you can do one gig, okay, we have two people, Joe can do another gig, okay, I'm doing a mobile gig, in terms of building the business and achieving scale, like how does it work building a team? And you know, from your perspective, especially with the mobile side,
yeah,
how did that work in terms of you know, staffing people and just making sure people, you know, we're going to be able to have the same quality that our customers are used to.
Yeah, I think that piece of it is like an art and a science. Obviously, like, you got to think business-wise. Like, it's a DJ, like, music is scalable, but DJing is not really, right? Well, you can do one gig. Ideally, you can do multiple in a day if they're, like, you know, some space between them. So on the mobile side, I think the big thing was making sure, number one, that we could get, you know, quality revenue. And I think that quality of revenue is able to like retain talent that you develop. I was fortunate, like I started DJing early, and so like my years of experience were like super high. But as we started taking on new people, like we taught, you know, we taught you to DJ, taught Glenn to DJ, like Joe taught Sean to DJ, and so on and so forth. And so I think that while each person was getting taught, we kind of stuck to like some parameters, like make sure you understand, like having good taste, you know, is a huge thing. Clean mixing is also a good thing. And I think
clean music.
Yeah. Clean music. Yeah. Actual clean music, depending on the kind of event. And then I think access to like quality equipment was huge too. And so I think that once we got that baseline of like people knowing how to DJ, it was like, now we can teach you other stuff too. Like, are you interested in learning how to do production? You know, if the answer to that is yes, all right, here's how you do sound, right? Here's what it should look like. Here's how you tape down the wires. Here's how you set up lights. And so I think having the DJ piece of it being like the foundation, and then like adding additional things from there. Because what that did for us is increase our service offering. So, because like most people know, like DJing is like Thursday through Saturday. You know what I mean? In like big markets, you can spend on Sunday and like some of those other days. But I think by getting, like, taking on the production stuff, well, conferences happen on Tuesday and Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Right.
So now people have access to, people would have access to be able to, like, do, like, different kinds of work and things like that. So kind of like a roundabout way of saying, like, quality cross-training to make sure we can service more events and do more so frequently and consistently.
Got it. So one more point on the mobile DJing side. Let's talk about pricing and like figuring out the margins, because there's definitely been an evolution for both, I'm sure, yourself and also for Plural Music. So talk to us about you know, where you started and where we are now in terms of pricing and kind of achieving a good margin on each event.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like I said earlier, started $0 an hour, and then I think then it was $80. A night, then it was $100 a night, and then I knew I was winning when I got to $35 an hour. Like, I knew I was killing them, you know what I mean? And so I think it was kind of like as I got better, my confidence got a little better, and I said, okay, I would feel comfortable like charging this much. Like, I remember my senior year of high school, I got to $50 an hour, and I was like, yeah, this is...
I quit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I was like, I ain't even going to college. I'm just going to spin records. So I think that was kind of the... That was the thoughts. But I think now, like, as I get older, my personal time becomes, like, more valuable to me. And so I put, like, a dollar amount. Like, if I got to give up a Saturday, like, can't hang out with my friends, don't get to go see my family, I don't get to go get drunk like everyone else, like, what is my day actually worth? And so what I did is figure out, like, a price on that. And then I, like, circulated that amongst my friends. Like, Jamie, like, would you do this gig for this much if you got to give up your whole day? Joe, would you give up your gig for this? You know what I mean? Like, trying to figure out what that looks like, and then try to essentially, like, apply a premium to people's time. So if I know I need to call, like, Ryan to cover a gig, I have confidence that he's going to do it. But he's going to feel good about doing it because he's going to get paid what he feels like his time is worth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, those were some of the factors that went into like, you know, getting pricing from zero to, like, what it is right now, while also still making sure that we're adding, like, delivering value to the customers. Like, I don't think it's really cool. Like, I don't think you need to charge, you know, like, $1,200 for a birthday party in someone's backyard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, or if you, or like, you're charging someone, like, let's say you're
maybe in Beverly Hills.
yeah. But like, if you're, I mean, I even think about stuff like this. Like, someone's like, hey, I know the price is this, but honestly, it's like super low key. There's like 12 of us. We just want to have some really good music. Like, what does it hurt to, like, work with a client on some stuff? Like, every single time? No, right? At that point, you're a discount store. But if you really think about it, like, let's say, I'd say at our peak, you know, 2019, we're still looking to come back to that after everything being closed down. But our peak, our organization was doing, I think, over 300 events a year, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So our San Francisco residencies, 3 times a week, 52 weeks a year. So that's like 156 events alone. It's just one thing. Weddings, probably doing between like 30 and 50 of those. And then like the residency stuff here in San Diego, and then the other stuff up in Oakland, like we're just doing hella events. And so I talk about those numbers to be like, so if someone's like, hey, you said 600, my budget's like $500. That's a no brainer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I've never been like, I don't know. I think I loved DJing before I could make money off of it. So I never been like greedy. Like, I'm gonna charge people because like we're skilled at something. You should be compensated for that. But I don't know. I don't think trying to gouge people and screw people is very cool.
Someone's giving me a note here.
Justin.
Yeah. Shout out our boy Justin. Well, yeah. Let's. I know you touched on a little bit about what your day is valuable to you, and you worked at. We talked about all of us having full time jobs. When we were at the HQ, you worked at Amazon. So can you explain to us a little bit about what that was like coming back from traveling 5 days a week and then going straight into a wedding? And what did you learn from that in terms of, you know, just being able to balance and enjoy life but also keeping up the hustle?
Yeah. I think that was a crazy window in my life. And I don't think that I'm grateful for it, but I don't think that I would live that exact same way again. That's how I'll say that. So number one, yeah, so work for Amazon. A lot of people think it's a tech company. It's actually a warehouse company. Like, there is more warehouses than there are high rises. There's more people pushing pallet jacks than there are like jamming keys on a computer. Anyways, so I was working for them as a project manager. And so I worked in the engineering team. And so our job was essentially to build all of those facilities where those vans come and get you guys your packages. And so we started that effort, and as our servers kept getting better, like, they needed more buildings, so we worked a lot. So for myself, I'd usually leave around midnight on Sunday nights, or fly out at 6 a.m. on Monday mornings. I'd travel to like two or three different states, usually all the way across the country, like New York, Florida, Nebraska, Texas, like hit two or three of those spots. And then fly back to California. And depending on where the gig was, is which airport I fly into. And so, not all the time, but a lot of time I'd fly in, try to get home and just like chill with the homies on Friday. But more than likely, like that Saturday and Sunday, like I was going to be gigging. And then even some rare occasions, I remember flying into SFO, getting a lift like straight to the club, like suitcase and everything. I was like, just bring my headphones, man. I'm ready to go. And so I think it's like a natural born hustle. Like I always always got off on that rush. Like I had to, it took a minute for me to like reconcile that I had like, not like an addiction. I ain't crazy or no shit like that. But like, I definitely have, like, I definitely enjoyed having like that positive pressure, like knowing I got to be here, knowing I got to like, knowing that I have like a role to play in these things. And so, yeah, like a lot of that, it was, I think for a minute, it kind of felt like a hamster wheel. It's like, wake up hella early, fly out, go see my engineers on site, type reports, fly back, and then like go work a wedding, go play the club, and then like do the whole thing again. So that it was exhausting, though. I'm not gonna front, like it was super, it was super exhausting. I think like by the time I finally got to the end of that, I think I was probably like 260 pounds. Like it was really bad.
So what did you say you learned? What was the outcome of all that?
Yeah.
How do you live your life now knowing that?
Oh, I'll be chilling now. Number one. But I would say what I definitely learned, like the value of like a day. Like I know how to get the most out of a day. Like ain't nobody gonna get more out of 24 hours than me if I put my mind to it. But I also learned like prioritization. Like if you know you gotta be here, and here, like you move through your day like a lot differently, and you have to think about it in a way like framed around like the success of what you're ultimately trying to do. Cause like, especially I'll bring it back to DJing, is like there is no like calling out sick. Like you gotta be there. So you know what I mean? So you gotta prep a bit. But I think what I also learned too was like, what does it take to like grow and scale a business? Cause like that work I was doing at Amazon was crazy. Like we're like, you go out to a field and we're like, okay, we're gonna build this whole structure. You know what I mean? And over the next 6 months, they're pouring concrete, building robots, putting in conveyors, all of this kind of stuff. And you're responsible for the different phases of this project. You're responsible for the capital budget. You're responsible for the operational budget. And you got a team of people relying on you for instruction, emergencies, like all of this kind of stuff. And so I think while I was able to compartmentalize some of the stressful pieces of that work, the positive stuff, I took that right home. Like, all right, y'all, let's consider updating the agenda like this. Let's look at how we can like copy and paste and like replicate this. So I learned a ton, bro. Like I'm super grateful for that window.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of us all having full-time jobs at these kind of like bigger companies. We can take everything that we're learning there and apply it directly to what we're trying to do.
Hell yeah.
Cool. So that was like 2018. We moved out to HQ. We all got our own place. Alon and I got the lake house by Lake Merritt. And then you guys ended up purchasing a house.
Yep.
We're killing it. 2018, 2019, 2020 comes around. We all know what happens.
Yeah.
Broke the fourth wall for that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so everything's devastated. We're all trying to figure out streaming. Talk to us a little bit about what happened to our revenue. And then also, I know you were the one handling all of the like the facilitation of the loans and everything, so talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was for sure, like, hella devastating. So, out of all the different stats and stuff I keep track of in business, the one that I care about the absolute most is, like, how much we pay our DJs. And that would have been on, like, a steady decline, 50% growth year over year for almost, like, 5 years straight. Like, we paid out this much in wages this year. Boom, we paid out this much. I'd be stoked about that every holiday party. Like, I'd be on there, like, super hyped about that. So, the world shuts down. And I was like, oh, shit, like, no more events. And I think it became even more stressful because I think we had, like, a decision to make. Because we had, I don't know, it had to be, like, 30 weddings and corporate events, like, on the books already. Yeah. These people, like, paid their deposits. And technically, deposits are, like, non-refundable. And I was like, that's shiesty. Like, if they hit us for it, like, we're going to return that. And a lot of wedding and like vendors and stuff didn't do that, but I felt that was important for us. But it made us even fucking broker. So I was over there sweating. So yeah, I think a lot of the stress for me was around like the financial piece, just trying to make sure that we could remain solvent and continue to like operate. But I think the other piece too is like that creative outlet. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
So, on the creative side, I think we were fortunate. We had shout out Ryan Powell. He's one of our like super well seasoned DJs, but also like a master technician. So he was able to ramp up the entire team on how to like set up your stuff to stream, what equipment to get. I think before like it got crazy, because I remember you couldn't buy like sound cards or nothing like that. They all like ring lights, everything got bought up. So I think we were able to recover creatively there, which was nice pretty quickly. The financial piece of it, though, was interesting because I feel like our industry was last in terms of the government aid, because I don't think people think of, like, people don't think of entertainment as essential until you don't have it. And then it's oh, there's no music. It's quiet. It's depressing. You know what I mean? But with that being said, we didn't have any programs available to us until like 6-7 months into the pandemic. And so I think we start streaming. I'm like checking like these like loan applications and the SBA programs every day. So I think that we got back to being creative before we got back to like having like funds again. So it had to be like June or July, and I was doing some renovations at my house. You've been there plenty of times. It's a giant backyard, which I was super keen on. And so last year I was like, man, I'm gonna remodel this thing, and we're just gonna make it a venue. So I was like, all right, y'all. Next call, I was like, I'm getting some work done at the house. We're gonna have like a whole space. We're gonna do our own events. We'll do social distance. We'll be outside. Blah blah blah.
Yep.
And we created this. We ended up creating this really amazing event series that we ended up like actualizing publicly this year, called All Genres Welcome. And it was I'd say it was probably one of the most relieving aspects during like the thick of the pandemic, because it brought, we selfishly booked all our favorite DJs. You know what I mean? We had Umami, we had Jay Espinoza, we had Miles Medina.
Spin for Change.
Yeah, the first rendition of it. So that piece of it I think was like super relieving, because we knew, okay, once a month, we're going to do some cool event at the house, because bars weren't even open in the Bay Area. Like, you couldn't even get a beer.
Maybe San Diego.
Yeah, but in the Bay, like, it was lockdown. So I think that that was cool creatively, and I think that, you know, in talking to a lot of those DJs individually, the backyard was a lot of people's first in-real-life gig since everything is shut down.
Yep.
And so being able to be that group that kind of like helped to push the envelope in a as responsible way as we could, I thought was dope. We were able to kind of scratch that creative itch. And then towards the end of 2020, like a lot of different programs started becoming available. So that became my life for like, you know, 6 months, like every day, applications, you know, tax forms, all this kind of stuff, justifying like, hey, like we're not scammers. We just need money because we paid into this system, and now we need the system to look out for us. So,
speaking of taxes, I want to give MC a shout out here. I think I asked a question one time about like, so how much does Flow Music pay in taxes? And you made a comment about like our business structure. You got all those books up on that bookshelf, not one on taxes. I was like, damn. I just went to Amazon real quick, bought a taxes book, and that's how that's like the spawn of the Taxes for DJs article. I was reading it in like February before the pandemic. Oh no, it was 2019. It was one of the years.
Yep.
And then I had written a couple articles. I was trying to be like this Tim Ferriss kind of guy, and then the Taxes for DJs thing just kind of came out of me, and that's kind of what is spawning this business of DJing thing.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for making that comment, because honestly, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being receptive, and I'm still working on my delivery.
Well, let's tie up the core music here, and then I have just a couple more things, and we'll end out with just some fun DJ shit.
Sweet.
So plural music today, where would you like to see us? Like, what are we doing from your perspective, and like, where would you like to see us in like 3 years?
Yeah. So I think what we're doing now, I'd say still like lots of private events and corporate events, with like an asterisk, is a lot of those are a lot more higher end than like business that we would have taken on in the past. So that piece of it is cool. I would say another thing that we're really pushing is like our event production. We were able to make some really solid investments on the production side of our business to increase our production value. So like much doper stages, much doper screens, like top tier sound, all of that kind of stuff. So I'd say those are areas that we're definitely pushing, but I'd like to get those to be just like on autopilot, in the sense of we get the inquiries and we go and service them. That way we can continue our focus on our live events, like where we're actually like getting a space, outfitting it, booking the talent, and kind of, you know, curating an actual event. And then also like on our artist development. So like we still work with, I think it's four artists, like directly. And so I think we're going to continue to develop them, amplify their sound, and help build out their individual brands. And I think that more and more on the creative side, I want us to home in on, developing a sound, you know what I mean? So I'd say in 3 years, making sure that we have like a clear delineation of the services side of our business, which is like we'll you know, build out your event, versus like the creative side of our business where we're creating content and creating an event. You know what I mean? Like I'd like to see clear delineations on those. I'd also like to see us have like a consistent like music festival type of event, either here in Southern California or Northern California or both. And then I think lastly, I'd like to see the artists and DJs we work with having a very clear option to just do like their music stuff full time. So sure. I'd say those would be, if I could pick three, that would be it. And nice. I think each one of those kind of serves like what we set out to do in the first place.
Man, Pro Music Through the Ages was cool. Going through all those ages.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so last thing before we just end with some Selecta style shit. You, Joe, and I are part of a group called One Beat Project, which owns a couple pieces of property. And I think that I don't want to speak for you, but the way I see it is essentially trying to use entrepreneurship and business to improve the community and just make a difference in the world. And so, can you talk to us a little bit about what the One Beat Project is, the buildings that we own, and what's inside of those buildings, and what's the future of that in the next couple of years?
Yeah, definitely. So, I think you definitely you said it correctly. So, I mean, I think anyone can buy a building and be like a landlord, right? But we're greedy and hands on. Like, so we want to like help our tenants build, and we want to help curate, you know, the zone in which we own our properties and stuff like that. And so One Beat Project, we started that in summer 2019, bought this old warehouse in downtown Stockton, maybe like a couple blocks from where we did our first actual events. And so in that building, there's a microbrewery, there's a recording studio that we built ourselves from the ground up, like, during the pandemic. And then like there's a small like music and performing stage in there too. And so I say like that's like the main like anchor within that batch of properties. And then then we have like another warehouse across the street that I think it's right now it's like a custom like auto shop, which is pretty dope. But we're thinking about what considerations we want to have for the properties and we own so that we can continue to affect change in that downtown Stockton area. So it's I always get excited about that, because I would say like the real estate business and stuff is like more of a grind and a slow burn, especially from like a revenue perspective. Like I spent more money than I've ever made off of any of those buildings. But
so far.
But I think long term it's gonna yield benefits outside of what goes in your pockets, if that makes sense.
For sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, bro, it's been dope. I want to try to end these interviews with just a little bit of Selecta style. So what do we got here? So let's talk about library organization. What's your rundown? How do you do it? Any tips out there for the young DJs as they're starting to build their library, or maybe even tips for DJs who want to destroy their libraries and start over?
Yeah. So I think like first and foremost disclaimer, like I'm a digital hoarder, you know what I mean? I don't know how many hard drives of like old MacBook Pros I have, like, oh, I might need this or I might need this.
Yep.
And then
I might play this.
You know what I mean? And then two, it's like when I used to go dig for CDs and records and shit like that. And so I'd usually rip those CDs and I'd rip the whole thing because I want to have the complete album. knowing damn well it's like, man, I want like six tracks off of this compilation. So all that to say, I think consistency is key. It's just like when you go to the gym, like if you like, you got to set aside dedicated time and go through it from there. I'd say like a trick. And so in iTunes, there is a BPM reader. So what I recommend is just organizing your stuff in iTunes. If you activate the BPM reader, then you essentially have the same view as you would in Serato. And then just do it consistently. I have like,
do you do it by genre? I know you have some like BPM crates.
Yeah.
It's like, what's your default? I feel like I always kind of revert to a default in some circumstances.
Yeah. The BPM crates, I think, was more of a crutch probably from when I was in college. Just when my library was only, maybe 2,000 songs or something like that. So it's like, shoot, I'm in the 80s. I don't got no transition pieces. My scratching not that good. I need to be able to get, like, I can't go too far from, like, the bass speed or whatever. Whereas now, I think a lot of time, I'm referring to, like, how like, a feel I'm going for. So I was at the office last night spinning, and I was like, man, I remember doing this holiday party for these software engineers. This shit would go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I remember where that crate is at. It was, like, you know, mobile DJ gigs, 2018 tech party, you know what I mean? So I don't think it's so much like genre specific as it is like feel specific. But I think that a hard default, I'm always, no matter, even unless I'm like doing a mixtape for a recording, I'm almost always gonna sort a crate by the BPMs. Even if I don't like go straight, you know, from like 80 to 120, I'm still gonna sort it by the BPMs, because I think for me organizationally, I can't
have to read it that way.
You know what I'm saying?
I can't
a 160
BPMs.
So I think I'll always BPMs. And then just try, I think other part too is like sometimes you, especially if you have residency, specifically if you have residency where you got to be somewhere like every, like, and I'm talking about like a consistent one, not no once a month. Nah, I'm talking about like where you got to be there like every week. Those ones really push you to like get creative, so you don't get bored. Like one of our top ones, you know, used to be Pink Elephant.
I know Pink, I'd be just playing the same set sometimes, and not the same order every time. But
yeah,
I'm like, damn, I need to try to do something better.
Yeah, but that's, it's a long gig. You know, you're almost 6 hours, and it's like high energy hip hop. There's no like lull. That was the crazy thing. There's no lull. And so
turn the Mac is your biggest low.
Yeah, you know what I mean. And it was like get it going again. So I think with that one was an interesting one, because I think everyone in our crew who did that residency, like you feel that you get there on some Sundays, and you just be like, fuck, man, what am I gonna do? So what I started doing, outside of ordering shots was I used my Serato history. And I looked at my calendar and said, when was like all my pink elephant dates? And I started pulling each one of those instances to make like a giant like folder.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And I looked and I was like, damn, there's over 500 songs in here. And you know, if you DJ, you know, depends on how you DJ, but you usually are going to spend between, for a four and a half, 5 hour set, you're going to spend between 150 and 200 songs, give or take, you know, depending on how long you play them. And so I'm like, okay, if I've used 500 different songs to rock this party, then I know I got some variety. So I think you got to just come up with creative ways to like mix it up for those consistent ones. But I think also too is like taking some risk. Like, is that like a hip hop brunch? Yeah, but like 20 minutes of house around hour 5 helps relieve everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it gets my energy up. They're probably tired of hearing me play it, so now I can go back down and we can both ride the wave together. You know what I mean? But I think that being able to navigate your library is key. I talk about it a lot, how much of a trip it is. Like, if you handed me your laptop to like go do like a wedding right now, I'd be hella stressed out. Even though I know you have every...
Mine's fine. Maybe Joe's.
No, Joe's would be the worst. Joe's would be the absolute worst.
You walk away.
Yeah, but even though it's like every song, I know every song file I need is on here. But the way people organize their stuff is like reading in a different language. So
that's so funny.
Yep.
So true.
Yep.
All right, bro. Last question. We're going to close it out here. Well, before last words, last question is going to be, if you were to plan a small festival, we don't have time for Coachella amount of artists, but in between 5 to 10 artists,
ooh,
who are you bringing?
Damn. 5 to 10.
In between, you know. You don't got to come up with all the 10, but yeah, at least 5.
Okay. I know for sure. Now, this is interesting because I always go between. It's like I love like artists. I love like DJs, like Scratch 'Em Up DJs, but I like producer DJs too.
So you gotta pick what kind of festival. What's your vibe?
Yeah, so my top artist. All right, I'm gonna sneak it in. So I'm gonna have Jazzy Jeff as the house DJ. So he doesn't count.
Very rare.
So he doesn't count as an actual artist. He's the house DJ, like you would have on a award show.
House DJ. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a house set.
Oh, okay. He's gonna do that too, probably. Okay. But he's gonna be the house DJ. So we got him locked in for the whole festival.
Got it.
I'm sneaking in. In terms of people I'd bring, I think I'd have to bring K Tronada for sure. Had to bring Keitra. Who else? I'd say probably Cali Uchis. That'd be some of my vibe. Sir from Top Dog. So I'm down to 3. So I got Keitra, Cali, Sir. Man, I'm trying to think who else. I'd probably do... maybe Snow Allegra. I think I'd probably consider her. So like I'm going like this cool like it's not like a rager festival. It's just like it's a cool ass festival. Then the fifth one, that one's tough. I want to have like one more like artist there. I'm trying to think. Having to do this on the spot, this shit is hard. Yeah, this is hard. Let me look at my playlist real quick.
Okay.
I'm a cheat. It is what it is.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Make sure it's legit.
Yeah, because I was like, man, I want to make sure it's got like all the stuff I really want to have on there. You know what I mean?
It's a balance between the range, in this, you don't necessarily think about what's going to sell, but that's how obviously normal event producers are thinking.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I'll probably bring Blast. I fuck with him.
Blast?
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. So we got Jazzy is the house DJ. We got Keitra. We got Caliucci. We got Blast. We got Sir. It's gonna be a good show. And Snow. Yep.
Dope, man. Well, any last words, piece of advice for this? Again, this is the business of DJing.
Yeah.
It's your boy James Selects. Any last words for people starting their business, starting their journey in the business of DJing?
Yeah, I think approaching it with like a level of humility. I think a lot of us people who have been DJing, like, we look like we're having a really good time while we're doing it, and we are. But it takes a while to get there. Like, you're not going to just walk up to the records and they just make this magic. Like, you've got to put in, like, a level of time. So having a level of humility when you approach it, having some patience, I think, and also, like, continuing to be, like, a student of the game. I think that things become a drag and things start to suck when you stop being a student. You know what I mean? Like, you're super grumpy because, like, these kids don't DJ the way that you DJ. And it's like, nah, they just got their own swag. You know what I mean? And, like, always being, like, willing, like, approaching it with an open heart, I think is what I'm really trying to say. So I think those would be the top things. And from there, like, you'll be good. And I think DJing is awesome because it takes on so many forms, right? Like, you could be a DJ that never performs, but you just like to spin records, and that's okay. You know, there's some DJs who have never played the club and they're never gonna play the club. They make a good living. That's okay too. So I think continuing to like view it as a community, and that like one type of DJing is not better like than another type of DJing, as long as that DJ respects the game. So
spoken like the GOAT himself, A-Track, when we were at the Beyond the Music conference, kind of similar vibe to what he was saying. And couldn't think of a better way to end it. I try to be a student of life. And I actually have an idea for like a future content style where I try to figure out how to be the best student of DJing.
Yeah.
So more to come that later. But,
looking forward to it.
Selecta MC, go follow him at Selecta MC, right? Or is it underscores or anything?
Yeah, Selecta underscore MC.
Selecta underscore MC.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. I like that. It felt natural.
Woo!
Hey.